Blog Talk Radio.
Afternoon. It's 3 p.m. and I'm Gwendolyn Berry. I'm here with my co-host, Nicole Tomasini, up in New York. I'm in South Florida. Hi, Nick.
Hi, Gwen.
How's your weather up there?
A little Camelot-y, a little cold, but you know, it is January.
Well, you know, I got to tell you, I'm double checking because, you know, it's weird out there, boys. We got us a tropical system down here it's got the rollers coming in and the surfers are all out. That's a nice thing for South Florida. But anyways, so how are your dreams lately?
Well, it's funny that we're doing this topic because I had something of, I guess, a lucid dream last night after having I did a meditation clear. I guess I'll just jump right into it now that you asked. So I guess to start it off. So I had I did a meditation. I found that I had some tightness and some things still stuck in my shoulder from a fall I had a few years ago. Hadn't really addressed that part. It was like more about the leg part. And so once I relaxed into that, issues came up that I guess I hadn't dealt with a past relationship. And so I did a whole bunch of clearing about this person and acknowledgement of my own feelings and releasing. And then last night, I had a dream about this person that I don't think I've ever dreamt about him. And
well, let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
How do you know it was a lucid dream? That's the thing. I want folks to understand what we mean by lucid dream, which most of them probably already do, but the hypnagogic state of between sleep and waking, that portal area that allows us to enter the lucid dream state. How do you know? What is your indicator? Tell people a lucid dream, what a lucid dream is.
Well, the clinical definition is that you are dreaming and you know you're dreaming and you can manipulate things because you know you're in a dream state.
Okay.
But I don't necessarily think that's how I do it. You know, they don't call me the jigsaw puzzle for nothing. I don't really go, oh, I'm dreaming. Although sometimes I kind of subconsciously realize I'm probably dreaming, but I accept the fact that I'm in a dream and I accept my reality like a good actor should, right? And it's just super clear to me, and I'm very aware that I can make any decisions here, but it's a subconscious idea that I'm dreaming. I'm not in the dream going, oh, I'm dreaming, because then I realize I'm dreaming, and sometimes that wakes me up.
Okay, yeah, that happens with a lot of folks who experience a lucid dream, especially for the first time. You know, there are four reasons that we dream. That is a basic umbrella under which dreams fall within, well, how our consciousness accepts dreams right now. In that lucid category, too, there's the precog dreaming, and then there's the medicine dreams. And, I mean, people, our bodies talk to us from inside out. We get images on how to heal ourselves many times through our dreams. It puts us in touch with our ancestors, our guides, our highest self. But really what a dream is, in my opinion, and many opinions that are forming today, like Robert Moss and a few others out there who are working on lucid dreaming workshops and such, and dream journaling and all these dream exercises, is that dreams are well, first of all, it's our entry into the multiple dimensions, and it's a connection with our soul. It's our soul actually impulsing what it wants our journey to be. Ancient cultures began storytelling within the community by sharing their dreams. That's how stories began. Did you know that?
No.
That's the writer's first seat. And you know that because you daydream what you write when you're writing fictions or you're writing films and you're plotting things, you know. You're daydreaming, aren't you? You're using your imagination. And whether you remember your dream in the morning or not, it's really important to write down how you feel when you wake up. We all feel something when we wake up, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
Now, you just had a dream, and I want to get back to that. How did you feel when you woke up?
Well, this is where I realized that it was a lucid dream, even more so, because, first of all, the objects around I was very aware of, and one of the moments of the dream, I mean, it was a lot, it was, you know, a fair amount of things happen, but I think the things that you remember, those instances really, you know, those are, I think, the key moments that your spirit is trying to point out to you. And one of them was that I went into this person's bathroom. I've never been to this person's house, if you can believe it. But in the dream, I went into his bathroom and it was a mess. And it was, there was in the toilet, there was like paper and I couldn't, and I was like, how does anyone do this? And it was, and I can see it like I was there, like it was real. And then, later on in the dream, I remember thinking, wow, Lionel's in, well, that's the person's name. He never listens, so it doesn't matter. He's never in my dream. I don't think I've ever dreamt about him. And then I realized that I was dreaming, and then I started to think about why I've never dreamt about this person, and then I kind of transmuted out of the dream. But to answer your question, how did I feel? I felt like it was very interesting, like it was the rest of the stuff from my meditation, and it felt very cleansing. Because okay. They kind of dropped out. Yeah. So yeah, there were some things that happened.
It's the emotions that's really important when we wake up. There's really a dream drought going on globally right now. Because advanced and westernized communities and cultures today, we don't share our dreams. Of course, yeah. We share dreams with friends when there are, you know, something outrageous happens or you have something. But the majority of the community, the society surrounding us, we don't share our dreams. And as it's the core, the kernel, the seed of our storytelling, which is the basis from which we've built all of our cultures up. I mean, we sat around a fire, told stories. And at some time, 100,000 years ago when language was developing, or I mean, come on, let's do some 2001 Space Odyssey here. I mean, you guys standing around with the fire pantomiming how he killed the beast everybody's eating. You follow where I'm going?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just been a community, and, of course, the basic first steps of shamanism. And we've got a drought of it going on right now because most people don't share their dreams. And the only place it's being shared is when we're children. And if we have a good dream or bad dream, especially if we have a night terror, and mom or dad comes in, or whoever we live with, whoever the nurturer is, comes in and says, you know, it's okay, it's only a dream. That's but it stops because our ancestors understood the value of the dreams and how they could tell us what was coming up in our life, whether we were getting sick, just all kinds of things. And right now, lucid dreaming, which is a dream like what you just did, you go in and you're aware of that dream, you're consciously manipulating a dream. That kind of, it's a very unique healing technique that folks are slowly coming back around to now. Don't you think?
I hope so.
Well, it's not just about accessing, it's not just about sleep, it's not just about healing the body. It's about also healing the mind. And don't you think it's interesting that that's when we find our portal, our way out, our way into other dimensions and other realities, and even creating them, that it happens during sleep?
And understanding, like, I think a good thing for people to who are interested in dreams and lucid dreaming is, you know, there's certain universal symbols that you can equate and really brings a further understanding. And one of them, like, for instance, I brought up the toilet. I was taught in college that any kind of cleaning mechanism, like a washer, dryer, a sink, a toilet, anything in the bathroom, the kitchen, anything that's flowing, flushing, is all about cleansing out things.
Yeah.
And so if it's not working or it's rotted or it's clogged, it really can tell you a lot about what's going on. And for me, like, it was really like the final understanding, oh, this is why a lot of this hasn't worked, because in this person's home, their cleaning mechanism, they can't flush the crap, right? Like, it's clogged. So
yeah.
For some reason, that, knowing that, it just, like you said, we download so much information in just a moment, and especially in a dream. So, like, it not only cognitively do I understand that, but it's like my whole being understands that. And it helps with the forgiving, because I understand it better, all because of that one obvious symbolism. So I think those little symbols, you know, anything that flies, water, cleansing, food, things like that, nourishment, right? You can really get a lot of information out of your dream with just these simple understandings of the symbols.
Well, the archetypes, they're really important. I agree. But it's also, I think, equally important. It's like I used to tend to ask people who I thought had better insight maybe into the stuff that is, you know, subtly surrounding me or attached to me, what a dream might be meaning to me. And I've learned over experience that the most important definition of my dream is always going to be the one I take. And that doesn't mean that I don't go and do what I would call it, like a personal, you know, archaeology, a dream archaeology. Find out what this means to you, you know, research it, find out what it's alluding to, kind of thing. It's also a time in my life I've been gifted with dreams that have, I've woken up from and I've known to go and do something. I mean, I learned how to make, you know, absolute oils through my dream.
I mean, wow, that's so cool.
That was actually, you know, Isis that did that. I mean, she gifted me that. You know, Paul McCartney actually tells the story of how he woke up a couple of times with songs in his head, two of them, most especially Yesterday and Let It Be. He dreamed them.
I knew one of them was going to be Let It Be. I was like, that's where he got Let It Be.
Yeah. But, you know, he also said that he had gone to bed that night thinking about writing a new song, and his intention when he was falling asleep, sort of ipso facto, was that he could come up with a song, and it worked for him. And I'll bet it still does.
And see that, like, that's a perfect example of having an intention, putting out a request, so to speak, and then going to sleep, which is where we don't offer resistance. So we're free and clear, and if, you know, our stars are in alignment and we have a nice sleep, we can really receive some exactly the information we're looking for, and boom, there's a new song, or boom, that's, you know, the next business move, or whatever, right?
Yeah, that's
but that's
true.
That
that's
releasing
true.
Yeah. Resistance moment.
Well, you know, and there's when you get a dream that you know means something to you, usually hang on to it, and you replay it. I have pretty good recall of many dreams in my life, but you can research your dream, and you can take action on your dream. That would be going to find out what it really means for you, or any other kind of action. Okay, I dreamt I was over at the beach. Go to the beach. You know,
right.
As simple as that. You can write a story, and that's dream journaling. You could paint a picture. Heck, you could make a cake. There's many ways that you could take action to keep your dreams working for you as a wonderful step for good mental health. I mean, the first thing is, though, that we all need to begin to remember the storytelling of dreaming, because the message might not be just for us, you know? And sharing our dreams, there's a lot of groups out there. There have been groups out there since the 90s, and Debbie and I were down in Pompano Beach at Daughters. There were a couple of groups that were attached to the shop that were dream circles. They would share their dreams, journal their dreams, and try to go into dreams together. And a couple of them achieved that. I think Asa oversaw those workshops.
Yeah, that's a really interesting concept, because it's funny you say this, and we're talking about the synchronicities, right? But when I was home, I have this book from college called Breakthrough Dreaming, and I just flipped open to a page, and that was what they were talking about, group dream circles, and
yeah.
How one of the things they said, and why it has become fewer and far between that these groups happen, is that you really need a group that's sort of vibrationally coherent. It's not that you all have to be having the same kinds of experiences in life, but there has to be some sort of understanding, openness, and it's like a delicate, you know, how much do I tell you that I perceive, how long do we talk about this, being cognizant of, you know, if it's something that's hitting a chord with someone, you know, to be compassionate towards what they're going through in life.
Well,
and,
I'm sorry. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. So just to be able to say those dreams, you tell the dream, the other people in the circle say what they feel or comes up for them when they hear this dream, and then they discuss. And one thing I wanted to say also is that a lot of times it's very obvious, but you being the dreamer can miss it. So in sharing your dreams, you know, you can really get those revelations.
Well, it's all about, everything in life is about intention, you know, and intention has a lot to do with our dreams. I think and practice makes perfect. But there's been a phenomenon for especially the last 10 years. There are some global chat boards and places you can go and find dream groups and dream workshops. And people from all across the world are having these stunning same dreams. Well, they're precog or something. But these dreams, symbolically, and even down to the story and the symbols in them, are all very much the same. You'll get a person in Bangkok and a person in Los Angeles and two people in New York City who, all four of them, have had this same dream, we all do a lot of the same dreaming. I'm going to point out here what is specific about it makes it unique. Same night, same timing. You know, and the guy in Bangkok is dreaming in the day because he's taking a nap kind of thing. But everybody is synchronistically having this same dream. And a few people have noticed the phenomenon and tried to correlate it, and they're coming up with some amazing results. And the results.
Wow, that sounds really cool.
Well, it's like rereading The Stand by Stephen King. People are having group dreams here. That's an actual phenomenon that's being cataloged by a few people, a few psychologists and whatnot right now. There are places where they are cataloging this because for the last 10 years it's been going on. So here's the thing here. There may be people out there who are unaware that some of the fantastic dreams they're having are not just the result of being an X-Files groupie or a fan of Star Wars or there's a whole group of people across the world from separate cultures who keep having dreams lately about pre-World War II culture in Germany and all the Eastern Bloc countries around Europe that were so involved. There goes the fire truck. That were so involved in the beginning of World War II. And that's an incredibly unique phenomenon. And you'd think most of these folks are like boomers, you know, and that genetic string is there. But it's not always. There's millennials out here who are having the same experience. I think that where a physical body has the genetic DNA, the physical DNA, our dreams are where we can explore our subtle DNA, you know?
Our soul's DNA.
Yeah, our subtle DNA. For instance, recurring dreams are important. You have recurring dreams?
Haven't since I was a child, and I only had one.
Actually, me too. And it actually, in the last couple of days, and that's why I wanted to do lucid dreaming, last couple of days of my life, it's become kind of a circle in my life. What's going on is, I had a dream when I was 11 years old, and that dream reoccurred a few times in my life, but I always knew it was more than a dream. You know, you have those things happen where you know, oh, wait a minute, that wasn't such a dream. You know what I'm saying? You wake up, you know, again. And this tells you that significance, for me, it was past life events. And it can be often for people, and that's why, you know, the researching your dream and having a personal archaeology goes on, because we do access, we have that access to those dimensions. So fluid time, perhaps we're surfing back and forth on our own lifetime span. The time, what do they call those? Like on Facebook, it's called the timeline. That's it.
Yeah.
So we're surfing. I mean, I when I was a kid, I dreamt, and it has not overshadowed, but it highlighted my life. I dreamt that I was on a battlefield. I was dressed in armor. I had all of the armor on, and I got to tell you, I could smell the world, and the world smelled so different. I could smell the air, the grass, the trees of the forest near me, the people who were on this field I could smell blood. I could smell, it was, you know, there was something going on there. I had just in the dream, I was aware that I had just run somebody through who had no armor on, but at the same time that I had, the blade had pierced my own by my shoulder, my right shoulder, gone right through my chainmail and had gone right into my right through my shoulder. And my right hand was where my I carried my own blade, and I knew at that moment that I was dead because there was no way I could raise my blade. I was gone. But I could smell the world. I mean, it was so weird. And at 11 years old, I woke up going, whoa, you know, what was that? And it drew me further in, because when I was younger, I began to read, you know, books like, you know, Nancy Drew, The Hardy Boys, Tom Sawyer. But my favorite was Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table, you know. And so that dream, I thought, as a child, I thought, wow, that was great. But it was me dreaming about what I really liked in life. You know, that those were the adventure stories I liked. So that was a part of it. But it always
kind of the fact that you're smelling and your whole business revolves around scent. And scent from what? Scent from the world. For who? The people. And you smell it all. I mean,
well, I got to tell you, smelling the past like that, smelling a different time, if people could do that, they would stop abusing the earth. They really would. It was so much richer.
Just even saying that, you know, makes me see to experience what would that smell like. And I feel like I can smell it. I'm like, oh, yeah, of course. And then while you were talking, I was like, what do you mean? Yeah, of course. I was like, well, I can just smell the earth just pure and vibrant. And also the fact that my olfactory hasn't been living in a city my whole life, like that works better too, you know, in this past life scent smelling. So yep. It makes perfect sense. So I think, see, even you telling that story will make people go, huh, what does that smell like? And then you kind of, you smell something in your head. Right?
You do. You really do. If you can imagine the smell of rich earth without any pesticides, no chemicals have been in anything. If you can see colors, that because the world's colors have changed so much. Mm-hmm. I mean, we do not see with the same color spectrum that we did, you know, 800, 900, 1100 years ago.
Yeah, right.
You know, but that it stayed with me. But there were lessons with the dream, and it followed me in life. And you know, knowing that there's this saying that I've had for I think probably since I was in my teens, I've used the term "boot on my neck." Do you know what that means?
No,
I never did. But it comes from that time and place. A boot on your neck is to be, you know, I've used the term to describe when I've been like in a financial place where I was struggling to pay a loan, or somebody had money that they had loaned me and I was trying to pay it off and I felt like they had a boot on my neck. You follow?
Uh-huh.
So that's what that was. But that's where it came from, because I've learned since, and this is long period of time, this is a lifetime span for Gwen, I've learned that that saying was directly connected to that life where I felt I had a boot on my neck. And I found that out because before, actually, I had the dream again the second time after, but I'll tell you what, it made me fence when I was younger. That's why I wanted to fence, was my fascination there. But then my mother crossed over, and I dreamt it again about a year later as I was getting ready to go on a trip abroad with my sister to explore Europe. And I came to a place in Europe where that dream became very alive. It's not that I dreamt it, but I just knew it was there. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It was somewhere around me. And we went into a cathedral. And the cathedral housed a royal antique where the king used to meet, and the chair was there, and all these boxes of the lords and earls and whatnot. In fact, the word earl is correct. Were on either side of it, and if you know, I when I saw that, I had this like really anxious feeling, almost like a panic attack. And all of a sudden, I knew that night that I dreamt about was actually, I could feel that night. I mean, when I got close to that, I could feel it. And all of a sudden, I just knew it was like a memory opened up. And I just knew that I had sat in this box on the end in a chair listening to this king, who I felt had a boot on my neck because I was honor bound to do as the king said, but I thought that the king was a moral bastard and I hated him. And I used to sit in that chair and in what you call show armor. You know, I wore a chin splint of armor. It guarded my chins and it went down and it cupped my foot, the front of my foot. And that, connected by around the back of my leg with like a strap, and then there was a heel that connected to the foot part of it, and on that heel was a spur. And that spur, I used to sit in that box and roll back and forth and back and forth because I was so stressed having to sit and listen to this person who was the leader, the king, saying what he had to say and doing what he had to do and making me, you know, I had to do what I had to do because that was my place. I was born into that life. You follow where I'm going?
Yeah. And didn't you go to that place and saw that it was rubbed out?
Yeah. Well, I didn't have the guts. I sent my kid's sister. She went up. She said, no, you're crazy. You know, there's no hole in that. Then she said, but there's like an inlaid wood. And I said, oh, yeah, they fixed it. I'm like, oh, my God. I never looked. I saw the heraldry. I never looked to see the name or anything. I just knew it was an incredible thing for me. But my point is also, this story is, this is how important dreams are for us. That in my life, I have, you know, this is just a way of me pigeonholing in my personal behavior and psychology and growth. Boot on my neck has been a way for me to, you know, carry around guilt or whatever and not living up to especially what your family expects from you, okay? Does that make sense? Do you see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
It's connected.
Yeah, sure. That responsibility or however you got that. Yeah. Or wherever.
Yeah. I grew up knowing that, you know, I had this responsibility, because I had certain privileges and that meant that I needed to give them back to the community. On my father's side, you know, I would have liked it if I would have taken a more leadership role and a more standard lifestyle in life. On my mother's side, though, I was blessed with, you know, follow your heart, more or less, and which is what I've done. But I've always had that boot on my neck because, hey, I'm proud of my father's family and such, but it was another boot on my neck. You follow where I'm going?
It's funny because this whole time I thought you were saying a Buddha on your neck.
No.
And I was like, huh, so it's on your neck, kind of weighing you down, but yet
yes,
it's a good lesson.
Yeah. It was basically a guilt. I carried a guilt.
Right, a boot. That's different. Yeah, sure, right.
Here's the most wonderful thing about this. All things are circle, and certainly this is some form of karmic circle for me. I finally had the dream again. But this time, there was no boot on my neck. In fact, I was happy to leave that life. You follow?
Mm-hmm.
Death was a blessing. And it's a very strange and unusual, but, and this is everything to do with my physical life, too, because here in the last, in the last week, I've been on a huge cleanse, and I have all these vegetables going through me, and my body's in somewhat of a shock stage right now, getting used to being in it. We're going a different route now, boys, you know? And I woke up with an awareness yesterday. And let me tell you, my physical anatomy was very weak. I had shakes. I did some, you know, because I'm really on a cleanse. It's fasting. And but I knew a circle had been completed. And you could probably point out, knowing me intimately, you could probably point out where I have had this guilt about moving forward, or, you know, trusting my instincts and intuition, and all of this stuff comes around to this point. Mm-hmm. I understood what boot on my neck meant and what it meant to me, and how it was basically, I was waking up yesterday to understanding that there's no boot on my neck if I don't, you know, I mean, I understood where it came from and why. So I was able to say, oh, my God, I don't have a boot on my neck. Do you understand? Does it make sense?
Wow. Yeah, what a huge, huge life lesson or experience or wisdom, understanding you came to receive.
It's a gift. It really is a gift. And storytelling it is sharing it. And my point is, this is how valuable our dreams are to us. Psychologically, physically, health-wise, all the way around. It is a part of our nature. And yet, folks back away from it because our cultures and society, hey, we've distanced ourselves from what our ancestors' wisdom was. With wholeness, community, and spiritual expression, accessing the unknown for ourselves, not through the surrogate of the priest or, you know, the guru or the rabbi or whatever. This is about the individual accessing their own spiritual messages, and a huge part of it is our dreaming. Not every dream is that significant, of course. A lot of it can be just taken out the garbage. But you know what? And there is a huge dream drought going on right now across the planet. And we see it everywhere we turn because...
Well, and you can see why. Because, you know, that whole thing you started with saying... We have a nightmare, and our caregiver says, oh, it's okay, it's just a dream. So you're belittling the dream, and you're going, oh, it wasn't real, don't worry about it, it's over now. And that's kind of the end of the story. So, you know, that sort of negates how wonderful it is that you can go to other time periods, other realities, other dimensions. I mean, I've definitely gone to places where I'm like, oh, okay, so we're doing this here, huh? Like the sky is purple and the ground is red. Like, all right, that's pretty, right? And everybody's just doing their thing. So, okay, it's just a dream, or is it? And so we've been disconnected from that. And even our nightmares, like not going, oh, don't worry about it. You're not giving it a chance to go, okay, like let's see where this maybe applies. Like where's this fear? It's an opportunity to look into the shadow, right? And what is this? Because a lot of times, it's a message from the other side of you.
Well, and that's the thing. Yeah. It's definitely connective to the self and the soul. But what it does is it can be incredibly fulfilling, and it can be incredibly scary because, you know, our ancestors knew enough to tell the child, okay, come out here and tell your story. Well, who is the figure in the black robe that's scaring you? Let's go in there. And, you know, through drumming, through all kinds of different hypnostasis that we use as meditation these days, our ancestors knew how to journey back into the dream as a group with, sitting around the fire with that child saying, look, who is actually in that robe? And what are they there to tell you? And in this, we used to face our fear. We used to face the darkness. Hell, honey, I'm so comfortable in my darkness. It's just really hard to get out. But when you have a breakthrough like this, when you have this kind of a breakthrough, using your dreams as your tool, it's incredible. You know, it offers people all kinds of, so storytelling is really important. And within groups, I mean, we've got that group phenomenon going on right now too, because so many people are opening up. And one of the big things is when you wake up in the morning and how do you feel emotionally is a big thing. You know, if I have a really bad dream, it walks with me. Don't you find if you have a really bad dream, it stays with you? It kind of shadows your day a bit?
Yeah, it's like a bad taste in your mouth.
Yeah, yeah. But it's important to feel that, you know? It's really important to feel that emotion. And that's where dream journaling comes in. Dream journaling can be incredibly important for us. You do it.
Yeah, and I'm kind of fascinated by those things. Like, it's rare, actually, that I have a bad dream. And it's not so much that I would call them nightmares, but it's like something went weird or went wrong or something, like I said, leaves a bad taste in your mouth. But, you know, that's kind of my scientific explorer side. I'm like, oh, I'm still feeling that dream. What is that? What is that? And then I'm like, oh, I'm still feeling that dream. What is that? What is that? What is that? And then eventually you either find something or maybe your subconscious figures it out and the dream is gone. Or maybe you just go to sleep again and have a different dream and that's the end of that.
Well, that's where the personal archaeology comes in. You can go and you could search that out. You could keep that intention that you're going to search for the meaning of that dream. You can also look to see what you recognize from your own life and what does it suggest to you. And this is where personal definitions about what the dream means is really important. I mean, you can go and you can look up and there's several really wonderful Jungian-based symbolism of archetypes, dream dictionaries out there. I use them just to, I mean, I have all my life had dreams that stick with me. I can remember a dream where I'm in the water a lot. So that's not fun. That's not a mystery. I'm bonded to the ocean. That's my mother, father, really. I was in the water, a bunch of freaking condos in the water and stuff, and I was swinging a white snake around. I can remember this dream, you know? I had it before I moved to Boston, and I was like, whoa, you know? And I didn't look for the meaning of that dream either, but and maybe that's why it stuck with me. But there are a lot of tools we can use. And you can find them all over the place. But some of the best tools are the sensual ones, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like softer bed or harder bed, you know? Getting it right with your sleep mechanism.
That's important.
Yeah, it's very, very important. Also, there's scent, working with scent, working with flower essences. There's all kinds of tools that we can access to help us with our dreaming. and the quality of our dreams and how to access them.
And technology, you know, to put this in there for people who are looking to dream more lucidly, sometimes, you know, all technology has a frequency, and a lot of times it can disrupt the transmission that's coming through in our dream time. So if you're sleeping with your head next to a modem, a computer, a TV, a phone, I mean, I have my phone right next to me, but I try to do everything I can to power things down, cover them up with, you know, like some sort of cloth that is spiritually resonates with you, I think is a good thing, because it's also, you know, at the end of the day, like our good friend Aisa says, it's only energy, but the intentions and how we work with the energies around us, you know, really, I don't think everyone understands how technology can really disrupt the transmission. And if you give it a different intention, even just putting a purple cloth over it that you feel is sacred, is telling not only your dreams, you're listening and will take steps to clear the way, but it's also telling the technology, listen, power down, just like a parrot, power down, no chirping. And Gwen got thrown out of BTR. That was the little chime. Yeah, so I'll just hold the fort until she comes back. That, yeah, doing those things, scents, working with some of Gwen's oils for the scents. You can put spray it on your pillow, a little something that helps you with dream time or what you fall asleep to, you know, turning things off, not having something chattering away in the room while you're dreaming.
That's really good. I have to apologize. I got thrown off the board.
Yeah, I saw. I informed the people. I just continued.
I do apologize.
Something woke you up?
My gosh. That was weird.
Well, it is Mercury retrograde. Lest us forget.
Oh, man, I did.
Well, see, Mercury's like, yep, hello. I feel like Mercury let our show go well, but don't forget that I'm not still here.
You know,
are you there?
I am. You know, I think people, what is your favorite kind of dream? I've had a couple of flying dreams and high up dreams in the last couple of years, which I never really had before. And I really love them. I love flying.
Yeah, flying dreams are really awesome. I've had a few of those, and it's interesting how you work out the mechanics of flying. You know, fast, slow, high, low. You know, that's fun to me. But I think my most fun are what I see is going to different planets and different civilizations. And I just find myself at this place with these people doing these things in these surroundings. And for some reason, you know, I don't have the gift of drawing, but somehow if I could transmute what I remember and see in my head, I mean, it would be a perfect picture. You would see it exactly. And certain places always stick with me, like the one where I said the sky was like this deep sort of purple and the ground was red, like Mars, like red dust dirt. And everyone lived in elevated glass enclosed structures that just passed from one into another, and where there was a room or a living room or an apartment, the bubble of glass, the structure would just bubble out. And so you could see all these things, but they had, you know, a fireplace and things that we had. And I remember a lot of times when I go to these places, I'm like, okay, I know it's different, and I know I'm not anywhere I've been, but like I said, somehow I just accept it, and I go, oh, okay, I guess this is what we're doing for a little while. So,
well,
And there's one other. Go ahead.
Well, it's important for folks to know, again, intention is everything. And you can, if you can achieve that consciousness, that lucid dream, you can teach yourself how to fly, too. I was like quasi-lucid in the dream because it's so real to me. And I just fly like Supergirl. You know what I mean? I just fly that. I just go. That's really strange, I guess. But but that is my imagination. And like what you were just describing to me sounded like the original Total Recall movie with Arnold Schwarzenegger. Kind of.
Yeah, like visually looks very different. But yeah, the concept is the same, definitely.
Yeah.
So and it's
go ahead.
It's just interesting how, like, things that you know and things that you maybe consider that you don't know, like, mixed together. Like the other dream I was just going to share, just because it's one of the most beautiful ones. I don't know if I can convey it, but I'll do my best. You know, I'm driving with two friends that I know in life, and we round this bend and we come around this, like, sort of into this mountain with a lake in front of it. And in the lake, there were these huge cushions like you would have like in a posh sort of wading pool. But they were gigantic. And I thought, oh, that's where the giants bathe. And then we came around and then the whole mountain comes around. And then all of a sudden you're at this huge temple where people had a pool in front of the temple carved into the mountain. And they were just these beautiful, like, you know, just people having a great time jumping in the pool. And then, but there was a very holy type of, like, in here is the temple and it is holy, but we're enjoying ourselves in front of it. And I remember coming up and around and going, oh my goodness, this place is amazing. And chilled out in it and did a few things and then woke up. But I will never forget that one.
And what did it mean to you? What did you finally figure out it was indicating to you?
To me, it's kind of like my Shangri-La, or like, you know, my part of Mount Olympus that, you know, had the giants, things that are set up for giants, and yet this just glorious glow of light. And then going there with my two friends that I know, it's like, oh, yeah, it's a journey that we're going into. And we can also journey into where's our council, where's the quote-unquote heavens, where's that beautiful, glorious place where everyone's enjoying themselves and the spirituality and the earth and the mountains are there. I mean, it's really, I can't think of a more beautiful dream I've ever had, so...
Well, you know, that might have been your connection to the elements of the earth, too. A lot of people are tapping in to the elemental expressions of the earth right now with all of the climate change. And they're finding themselves, you know, at home with and exploring the different elements, something I actually connecting directly with the animate forces of the earth, the plant and the mineral kingdom of earth, and smells that, you know, just, and the oceans, the rivers and the lakes, or the skies and the air, or the middle earth journeying. And that's about fire. That's about the heart of the planet, you know. There are people going through group collective dreaming about connecting up with the planet that way. And that doesn't seem at all unusual to me, especially right now. And like I said before, it's about intentions and setting your intentions. And if you wish to be a healer of the planet that way, you certainly can do some time in your dream work.
Wow, that's an interesting intention to set, to go to Middle Earth. I mean, that's a whole other show, but if you do know about Middle Earth, you know,
yeah,
I never thought to go there.
I'm always wondering about the show me on that one. However, I have to say my instincts are that there's something to it. And I mean, I've witnessed things that are unexplainable at sea. I mean, we used to go out in a whaler. My friend Brent and I would go out in a whaler and be off the coastline for, I don't know, maybe 2-3 miles out. And these humongous whirlpools, football size whirlpools were going on. We'd be backing off of it and just watching this phenomenon. Of course, I understand now, after education and time, that much of that phenomenon was about the subterranean tunnels that go from the ocean floor down into and underneath the state of Florida and such. But these phenomena have other elements to them too, that, you know, even the NOAA and the Navy can't figure out what's going on here, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, That's extraordinary. There's a lot of folks also out there who are having group dreams and stuff, and always have. And you don't know whether it's a lucid dream or it's abduction. You know where I'm going with this one, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a lot of folks have got the UFO shit going.
That's a whole other show, isn't it?
But there is that phenomenon going on in people. I heard a description of a dream that's going around where, you know, the black helicopters, and they are out there, by the way, that there are black helicopters that the government, you figure the government's got. They swoop in and out of territories and stuff. But people are seeing these black helicopters turn into cubes and spheres and UFOs in front of them within a group. And then people dream this dream and they see people in the group that they know. And then they'll run into those people and say, you know, I had this really odd dream. And both of them had the dream.
Wow.
Now tell me about that one, will you? That is really, really kind of strange. But I go back to, with group dreaming, I go back to the fiction of Stephen King and The Stand and the phenomenon of the group dreaming there to guide everybody where to go when the apocalypse happens, you know? But then again, you know, if other dimensions are guiding and directing us, how else are they going to achieve mass messaging? It's going to be through dreams, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So it's really interesting
stuff.
We're at the bottom of the show. We're at the very end.
Yeah. Well, great talks. And I want to mention that next week, we will have Maureen McGill on, who is a wonderful tarot reader and an author, and is actually working on a Native American story, but is an author, wrote a book called Baby, It's You, Messages from Deceased Heroes. So she'll tell us about her book, and she'll do some prediction reading, not prediction, but pulse of the vibe for 2016 and show off her skills a little bit. So that's next week.
Okay, great. Well, thanks for being with me today, Nick. And
yeah, thanks, Gwen.
We will be back again next Saturday at 3 p.m. This has been The Consciousness Shift with Nicole Tomasini and myself, Gwendolyn H. Berry. And have a great week out there, people. Be safe, be healthy, dream.